You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Deanna Lee.
And I'm Evan Banks. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's August 9th.
As fears of a wider war in the Middle East grow, the Iranian-backed Houthis continue their attacks on commercial and military ships in the Red Sea. And in July, the group struck Israel with an Iranian-manufactured drone. It was the first time the Houthis had been able to hit Israeli territory after months of trying to do so. The Houthis claim that these attacks are a response to Israel's invasion of Gaza. U.S. and British forces have responded with strikes on Houthi military targets, but bombing the group into submission won't work, says RAND's Alexandra Stark. The Houthis can endure significant punishment and still continue to launch attacks against shipping in the Red Sea and against Israel. Also, the Houthis aren't all that worried about losing some of their military capabilities. In fact, they likely believe that they're winning, not necessarily the war on the ground, but the information war. Houthi leaders have calculated that they gain more adulation and support in the region by staging these attacks than they lose from having to absorb bombardments, Stark says. They see their war as a public relations initiative. And so far, in their eyes, it has been worth every ounce of blood and treasure. The group's view is not unfounded. Even as attacks on Red Sea shipping make life harder for the people of Yemen, and even though Houthi rule is violent and oppressive, the Houthis' support for Palestinians resonates widely in Yemen and across the Middle East. So far, the Houthis have been able to successfully use violence to portray themselves as defenders of the Palestinians. And unfortunately, the U.S. has few good options when it comes to responding to the Houthis, Stark says. But the best chance Washington has to deter future attacks is to find ways to counter the Houthis' messaging. Information campaigns on social media may help, but the most straightforward approach to blunting the Houthis' message is to reach a sustainable ceasefire in Gaza.
Since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, Asian American communities throughout the United States have faced a new wave of anti-Asian hate. RAND researchers recently conducted surveys in New York and Los Angeles to better understand these communities' experiences. Here's what they found. More than one-third of survey participants reported experiencing an anti-Asian hate incident. English speakers, 18 to 24-year-olds, and those with higher household incomes were more likely to report experiencing a hate incident. First-generation immigrants were more likely than later generations to take action after experiencing a hate incident, such as reporting the incident to the police or seeking help from a community-based organization. Major barriers to reporting hate incidents include language issues, lack of time, and lack of awareness of available resources. Approximately 45% of participants were unaware of community-based resources available to address anti-Asian hate. These insights may inform new strategies that can help community-based organizations better support people affected by anti-Asian discrimination and violence. For example, organizations may want to strengthen their services to meet the needs of members of two particular groups: English-speaking later generations of Asian Americans who have more exposure to discrimination, and older adults who might have difficulty recognizing and expressing experiences of racism.
This past Monday, Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina resigned and fled the country amid widespread violent protests seeking her removal. According to RAND's Rafiq Dasani, the collapse of Bangladesh's Awami League government is a cautionary tale. At the turn of the century, the Awami League offered hope that a democratic government of the people could take hold in Bangladesh. However, that government quickly abandoned promises of honest and frugal leadership in favor of expensive populist policies and corruption. And when populism failed, repression became the means of controlling the inevitable descent of the Bangladeshi people. More recently, with Sheikh Hasina at the helm of the Awami League government, hopes for democracy in Bangladesh were all but crushed. Hasina, quote, figured out the dials of governance without performance, Dasani says. The main prescription, crush the opposition, repeat every 5 years. In fact, her government sought to subdue its opposition to a degree not seen before, jailing opposition leaders and violently cracking down on opposition supporters in advance of the 2014 national elections. Judicial independence had disappeared by then, too. This strong-arm strategy was repeated in 2018 and 2024. Rather than a democracy, the government merely established an electoral autocracy in which leaders seek to rule forever through a vote every 4 or 5 years, and repression otherwise. Hasina's ouster shows the flaws in this model, and given the turmoil now facing the country, Bangladesh is in for a difficult period ahead.
Non-lethal weapons can be used to influence an adversary's behavior by causing temporary reversible effects. For example, an acoustic hailing device generates irritating sounds. A laser dazzler creates a distracting glare that doesn't damage the eyes. An active denial system emits millimeter wave energy to create a temporary heating sensation, and various electronic and mechanical systems can halt vehicles or vessels. These methods, however, have rarely been used beyond military policing contexts, and there has been limited exploration by the U.S. Department of Defense on how and whether to use non-lethal weapons effectively in various situations. A new RAND report aims to fill this gap by exploring the potential use of non-lethal weapons in a wide range of scenarios, including in gray zone situations, civilian encounters, and in full-scale combat. The evidence suggests that two particular non-lethal weapons, acoustic hailing devices and laser dazzlers, were useful across virtually all scenarios the authors explored. The authors also found that non-lethal weapons overall can be particularly useful in confined, crowded, or complex environments. However, very close ranges can cause some of these weapons to affect U.S. forces in addition to the desired targets. Desirable future capabilities for non-lethal weapons include those that could be used against large ships, automated systems that could point multiple laser dazzlers at multiple moving or stationary targets, and a more portable, battery-powered active denial system. You can find the full report at RAND.org.
Since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, NATO has gone back to basics and focused on collective defense. But even as NATO's top priority remains deterring and defending against Russia, RAND experts say this doesn't mean the alliance can afford to neglect its commitment to dealing with emerging incidents and crises before they devolve into bloody military conflicts. So what should NATO do? Most importantly, our experts say, allies should redefine crisis management in today's changing geopolitical environment. This might include a greater emphasis on prevention activities, increased focus on anticipating future crisis scenarios, and integrating key lessons learned from crisis management during the war in Ukraine or efforts to defeat ISIS. NATO's interaction with other multilateral organizations will also be crucial. Collaborating with the European Union, for example, can enhance the collective ability to respond to complex and emerging crises. And NATO cooperation with the United Nations could focus on sharing lessons learned, best practices, and standards, including in key areas like women, peace, and security, and civilian protection. Importantly, our experts note that the need for crisis management operation extends to more than just military aggression. It's also important for potential humanitarian disasters and technological disruptions. Overall, an enhanced commitment to preventing and managing such crises could better position NATO to promote stability around the world.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.